This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Oregon Children's Theater, presenting the world premiere of The Giver, the story of a boy learning of the tragic sacrifices his community has made for safety and security. The Giver runs March 5th, 11th, and 12th, 2 p.m. at Keller Auditorium, 222 Southwest Clay. Tickets at 503-228-5971. That's 503-228-9571 or Ticketmaster.com. Appropriate for ages 10 and up. Information about The Giver at octc.org.
ago version of Can't We Just All Get Along? And that's kind of what our show's all about this morning here on Positively Revolting Talk Radio. And in just a moment, we'll be diving into that topic. So it's a beautiful, beautiful Friday morning out there. The sun is shining, the birds are singing, the blossoms are bursting out on the cherry trees. And I suggest you enjoy it because it's going to start raining again on Sunday. So let's all go out there. The spring is coming, and let's hope that with the return of spring, that our spirits will rise and that we will continue to be strong, because we have a lot of work to do in this world, folks. I'm Melody Silverwolf, and my lovely co-host Ani Haynes will be here in just a moment. And in the meantime, before we get Ani in here and start talking to our lovely guests, I have a couple of announcements. And they are both related to the topic of our show this morning. It's just, you know, synchronicity and all that. The first one is an announcement of a great talk that's called, it's called Latin America's Shift to the Left, an update from Brazil. And Andrea Borges Ferreira, who's one of Brazil's landless workers, the movement's called MST, abbreviated from his language, is going to be showing a film called The Landless, Thought America's Path. No. That's not right. That must be a typo. Thought America's Paths? Huh. That doesn't seem right. But anyway, it's called The Landless. It depicts the birth, the path, and the struggles of the movement for land distribution, human rights, and food sovereignty in the last 20 years. And it says the MST is the largest social movement in Latin America, with an estimated 2 million members organized in 23 of Brazil's 27 states. And since 1985, the MST has peacefully occupied and won title to unused lands for over 300,000 landless families. So this is going to be a fabulous film, and then Mr. Ferreira will be there himself to speak about the film and the situation in Brazil. That's on Tuesday at 7 at the Liberty Hall. It's at 311 North Ivy. It's a block south of Fremont, two blocks west of Vancouver Avenue. And there is a donation requested, but no one will be turned away for lack of funds. So if you have need more info, you can call 360-259-1679, and I'm sorry, that's 1-879. And also, if you aren't going to miss that, you can catch Ms. Ferreira at it's going to be at PSU at noon on Tuesday at Smith 327, and Lewis and Clark from 3 to 6 that same day. So hopefully you'll be able to catch that. It sounds like an excellent film. And then, of course, this Saturday, which is tomorrow, there's going to be a march for the respect of all workers. No human being is illegal. And the march is going to be against the Sensenbrenner Bill, which we're going to be talking about this morning, a piece of anti-immigrant legislation that passed the House in December. And it's scheduled to go to the Senate, and it's not a good bill at all. So, and on Saturday at noon, the march will begin at Pioneer Square, and you all know where that is. So I hope that you are there. And if you need more information about it, you can call VOS 503-233-6787. If you are down in Salem, so you don't have to call long distance, call CAUSA 503-763-1694. Otherwise, please come tomorrow at noon at Pioneer Courthouse Square. And with that, I would like to introduce my lovely guests. We have Elizabeth Perry and Christina Perry Gonzalez with us this morning. And they're here to tell us all about why the Sensenbrenner Bill is such a bad piece of legislation. And knowing the history of Mr. Sensenbrenner, just about anything he introduces would probably be not a piece of legislation we would support, but this one's especially egregious. So welcome to our show, Elizabeth and Christina.
Good morning.
So tell me, what is the gist of this legislation?
Well, what happened in December is that Sensenbrenner introduced legislation, and the legislation, it has been characterized by people who've worked on immigrant rights issues as the worst in probably over a century. And what it would, among the things that it would do, would it would immediately make people that are here without documents, whether that's pending residency, whatever their residency status, into felons immediately. It would make people who provide any service to them, it would make people that work with the immigrant communities accomplices. And
so would they be felons too?
Criminalize them as well. And in certain cases, if you're transporting maybe a mother to the hospital, you could be charged as a smuggler. It's probably.
Or what about a doctor at the emergency room?
That's right. Anybody providing any kind of assistance or service to
a teacher in kindergarten.
It is unbelievable. It's really. I think that people need to really think about the worst possible scenarios where, you know, you have a neighbor who maybe their father applied for residency status, you know, when he was you know, getting his citizenship, and, you know, she's been your neighbor for 10 years, and, you know, she goes to work every day, and you say hi when you come home. Well, any assistance to that person, you are immediately accomplice to her crime of being here in the United States. And I know this is a really challenging issue, even in the progressive community. I don't think that we've had the type and the depth of conversation that we need to have in order to really fully understand the nature of the relationship that we have. You know, in some ways, what I think is really interesting, and I've worked all my life on, you know, standing up for my community and working on behalf of my community, and I've also worked on peace and social justice issues all my life. But this is one of the topics that I find really challenging in the progressive community, because I don't think that we've really had full discussions. And I think this, you know, it is a crisis for our community, for the people that are immigrants or that, you know, whose families have been immigrants. But it's a crisis for all of us, because the human rights issues are really what's at the forefront right now.
Well, I'm just appalled that this has passed the House. I mean, I guess I shouldn't be surprised, but everybody in the House who voted for this should be deeply ashamed of themselves. This is really, I mean, on the heels of September 11th, now that Terror isn't scaring people enough anymore, and Bush's ratings are plunging into the 20s. Now they have to come up with another bogeyman.
Right.
And illegal immigrants, you know, those evil people who are coming to take your jobs.
That's right.
are you know, the next bogeyman. And this is just appalling to me that, first of all, anybody who's here, and of course, not all illegal immigrants are from Mexico. You know, a lot of people perceive illegal immigration, they immediately think of someone from Mexico or Central America. That's just not the case. And not only that, but the point is that these people contribute enormous amounts of money and services to our society.
I think that one of the things that I always try to point out is that immigration is a historical, the way that the history of immigration, the doors to what is now the United States have opened and shut at the will, based a lot on the economic needs of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And the doors have opened and invited in workers to serve a purpose historically. And then when that purpose has been done, then people have either, you know, the Chinese who built the railroad. Many workers have been who have contributed have also died,
yes,
because of the immigration,
yes,
policies of this country. And again, right now, what we're facing really is the scapegoating of working people as a part of the Bush administration's way to keep us divided as a progressive community. And I think that that's really what's at stake right now, is that we have to realize that this is just one more way to divide us and keep us fearful. And that really, you know, Mexican people, Latin American people are revolutionary people. And, you know, I hear progressive people talking all the time about, you know, revolutionary change. Well, we have that revolutionary history in our history, and we know what it takes to make social change. And we do it every day by standing up for ourselves, but we need our allies to stand up with us right now.
Well, and it's my understanding that many, many church groups, and I mean a huge wide variety of groups that ordinarily don't agree on anything, everything from labor unions to churches to progressive people to the, you know, doctors and nurses and teachers, and are opposed to this bill with good reason, of course. I've heard also that there are some very bizarre provisions in this bill. For example, one that would strip away environmental protections in areas along the border where a lot of endangered species live, which would basically well, they would allow, you know, hunters or anyone to run rampant there and destroy a lot of efforts that the Mexican government and the U.S. government have been doing to protect the, you know, wildlife in those areas?
You know, I'm going to be totally honest. It's a 200-page proposal that Sensenbrenner presented. And what was interesting, and you mentioned that, you know, it was ironic that it passed. Well, he introduced it right before Christmas break.
They all wanted to go home.
Right, yeah. They wanted to go home. I think it spent 2 days in committee and passed within 10 days. 200-page proposal. So I'm sure that they carefully reviewed all the provisions.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I don't mean to be I don't mean to be disrespectful in terms of process, but no one can truly comprehend, debate, and thoughtfully amend something with
of
the 200
not.
Pages. So what I think has happened is Sensenbrenner has pushed the debate far to the right, and now what we're facing is that the Senate has already started to look at other provisions. And what I really think needs to happen is a few things. One that you already mentioned, I'm encouraging people to come out tomorrow. I really think that being on the streets, not only immigrant people, people are afraid to go downtown tomorrow to be surprised.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the courage that they're demonstrating by coming out tomorrow is saying, we contribute to our community. And, you know, there's local communities across the country that are really coming together to say, you will not make us a fearful people. And I've had students and workers tell me, is it going to be safe? And, you know, the sad thing is, who can say
none of us are safe,
right?
In a country like this, I suggest a paper bag over your head with eye holes cut out. I'm deadly serious if that's what it takes, you know, to protect people.
And so what I am saying is those people who may be not the typical targets in this type of a march, which I don't know what that would be anyway, but I would say anyone who has stood for social justice on an international basis, who stands for justice, I really would like to see everyone come out tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our people are going to come out and take a risk.
This is one of those times where, you know, I continue to say practice solidarity like our lives depend on it, because they do. This would be one of those times where it's an excellent opportunity to practice some solidarity. And everyone needs to be concerned about these issues. This really goes to the heart of what, in third grade, when I was going to school and going to my social studies class, this goes to the heart of what I believe America to be about. When I learned about the Statue of Liberty, you know, when I learned about that whole give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses, yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. I mean, you know, I remember singing this in choir and stuff, and knowing that my mom immigrated from Britain, you know, after World War II, for any of a number of reasons, and that much of her family immigrated to Australia or New Zealand or to Canada or to the U.S., this issue really hits pretty close for me. And I'm going to guess that most of the folks listening, well, either have immigrated from another land or their parents or grandparents have. At least one grandparent, statistically, it's just likely. And so this really does affect us all. We like to, a lot of us who have the privilege of pretending, oh, we've been here forever, oh, yeah, we don't have to worry about that. You know, it's just damned hypocritical if, in fact, you cop that attitude. You know, this is supposed to be that America I learned about in third grade, right? I like that America better.
That America has been revoked.
I like that one better.
So, Christina, we haven't heard from you yet. I'd love to hear your perspective on this.
Well, my perspective is that I'm joining the struggle as a student, as a Chicana, who has seen, as Ani was saying, that we can trace our history back to immigrants, even if we ourselves aren't immigrants. And that's why we need to come together in this fight. It doesn't mean that only the immigrant community is going to stand alone, but that we need to be there next to them fighting hard,
mm-hmm.
not to get not only the Sensenbrenner not passed, but anything else. Specter, there's also a Specter markup in the Senate right now that we're also struggling against. It's not just one thing. It's a continued fight to stop this anti-immigrant sentiment that's happening in our country.
So I totally agree. And, you know, I think that there is a lot of, as Elizabeth said, getting back to something that you said a while ago, there is a lot of, well, I'm not a racist and, you know, but kind of sentiment among the progressive community. You know, I think what's happening is that as people, as more and more jobs are being outsourced, people who used to consider, you know, illegal immigrants as not a threat to their jobs because they weren't being farm workers or dishwashers or whatever, now they look around and they go, well, maybe they are a threat to my job. And I think this is a calculated situation that has been created by the powers that be, those who have the power to create these situations, to set us against one another. And it's just not, we shouldn't buy into it, no matter how much we fear, you know, that we're not going to have a job or whatever. The solution is not to attack illegal immigrants. That's not the answer. And I think that people tend to devolve to the easy answer too many times without looking harder underneath it and going, well, what's the real solution here? What's the real problem? Who's creating it?
Right. And I think that, I don't know, there were several things. Ani and I must have been on the same wavelength this morning, because I was thinking back to the Bill of Rights, and if I'm not forgetting my U.S. history, about we hold these truths. Is that part of it?
Mm-hmm.
To be self-evident that all people, I think they would have wanted to say now.
Yes. We will assume.
Yes. All humans are created equal.
Yes. And I think that people forget that all humans mean, or all people is all people, and mm-hmm. That it was a revolutionary document that we should continue to hold to. And to bring in the international aspect, one of the successes of Chavez's revolution was that he taught people about their own constitution. You know, he taught people at the grassroots level about their constitution. So they, in their hands, held their constitution and held to it and knew that when his presidency was being destabilized, that they had a right to rise to the streets. And mm-hmm. that's the level of involvement that we need from our community right now, because we are all at risk with this type of legislation. And, you know,
absolutely,
I think that that's really the key, is that we, none of us, no matter what your immigration status, no matter when your parents or grandparents came from, or if you're an indigenous person, you know, we are all tied together by the level of fascism that our country is facing right now.
Absolutely. Hear, hear. Well, and just the things that you were saying, how people who assist anyone who's an illegal immigrant will be considered to be a felon as well. I mean, I think that goes right along with the efforts to paint people who are on the far left and take direct action and commit civil disobedience as domestic terrorists. I think those are part and parcel of the same effort. And if you don't think that, you know, people like ourselves here at KABU, if that domestic terrorism thing goes ahead, could be considered, you know,
exactly,
we'd be
right,
charged with felonies for aiding and abetting terrorists. If you don't think that could happen, then you're in some kind of dream world, people, and you need to wake up. I think this is really, I think that they're tipping their hand a little bit with this anti-immigration
bill. Right.
Actually, this is kind of a favor to us. It's waking us up.
Well, I hope so. I really do, because I shared with people this week, and I think it might have even gotten on the KABU News, that last week what happened was there is a federal effort to encourage immigrants, regardless of their immigration status, to file their taxes. And what happened last week, and you know, most people really want to.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, fear has often stood in the way. So there's been a federal grant given to encourage and train people how to do that. Well, here last week, this hit home very closely to me. I work for a college, and I work for Mount Hood Community College, as a matter of fact, and it's a wonderful program that helps returning people come to college. One of my students, who is an immigrant, was on her way to get the federal tax form that you need as an immigrant to get to get that form so she could file her taxes. She's a young woman in her early 20s and exemplary student leader, always contributing to the community, volunteering, you know, 3.5 GPA. You know, who wouldn't
right.
be proud to have her as part of your community? So she's on the way with her sister, both of them students, to get these tax forms. And then as she's walking into the federal building, is questioned about her status because she didn't have the proper ID. And when asked about her status, unfortunately, you know, revealed that she didn't have residency status and immediately detained. Well, this set off a chain of events that unfortunately will exemplify to the audience, I hope, what's actually happening in the United States. So she's detained, sent to Tacoma in the next couple of days because that's where the detention center is. The sister, luckily, comes and starts to put the things into motion by trying to find help for her sister. The parents are fearful because they're wondering if immigration will come to their home, so they go and stay at the home of the brother, of this young woman's brother. And what happens a couple of days later, immigration comes searching for the family and goes to the brother's home and says to the brother, if you do not turn in your parents, we will take your children from you. Now, I have this on direct testimony from the brother. So then, you know, here's a baby, mm-hmm. you know, a child that's maybe not even a year old and his five-year-old son, and you get the moral dilemma of you can either turn in your parents or, you know, hope to hold on to your children. Mm. And, you know, I don't think any human being would ever want to be placed
That's not a human
torture.
Decision.
It's torturous.
Right. Well, it's just outrageous. It's entrapment.
It is. But it was under the guise of harboring. I mean, that's probably the angle they were coming.
Right.
So he does. He does. You know, and right. imagine the tragedy. Okay. So then they're not done with him. They say, well, you know, the younger sister happened to escape that particular piece because she was at the college. And so then what happens? They say, well, you know what? If you don't show up on Monday with your sister, we will take you into custody and we will take your children and put them in state custody. Now, I don't think that really that was, I think that was a ploy, and I think that that was a tactic, and I don't know if they could have actually gone forward, but he did. He went forward and turned himself in. And the story really is that this is still all in motion right now because it's all just evolving. But really, I think that it's done exactly what you've said, is mm-hmm. that if you use this as an example of where things could go very easily, they will be knocking on
sure.
Ani's door to find out where, you know, your neighbor mm-hmm. is. And, you know, sure. we will all be a part of a very repressive,
right. and of
an
course,
increasingly repressive.
We're going to be reading about this on the front page of The Oregonian, right?
Yes.
Not.
Right.
Yeah, see, I would have never had any idea this was going on if I hadn't heard it from you. And I just, like, think that's really telling. Like, what, they're hauling away people
yes.
who are law-abiding, who
yes.
go to be, who stick their necks out to be law-abiding, and then they get hauled away? That's
they,
just appalling.
Well, and I think what the images are, and this is, I think Christina probably has lived this, is you sit in either classrooms or you hear these conversations or you watch TV, and you're not going to see a young immigrant woman on her way to find her tax form so she can do her duty. That's not the image that people are portraying of immigrant people. They're not going to, on the evening news, highlight the contributions no. of immigrant people. But that's our community. Those are the people in our community, and those are the people I work with every day. So, you know, if I disappear suddenly, you know, you might want to come look for me because this is what it's really all about. And
hey, you know, I just want to point out
yes,
this is 2 weeks in a row that somebody has said, if I disappear suddenly,
yes,
please check up on me.
Yes, it is.
That's 2 weeks in a row, and these are two women who I find to be level-headed, you know, well, good community people.
Not the sort of people you expect to disappear. By the way, everybody, it's 5 minutes after 8. You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 100.7 FM in Corvallis, Albany, 91.9 in the Gorge. And this is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. And our guests this morning are Elizabeth Perry and Christina Perry Gonzalez. And we're talking about the appalling anti-immigration bill that's been introduced. It's already passed the House. It's going to go to the Senate. And I bet you know what we want you to do about it, huh? And we'd welcome your calls and comments and questions, 503-231-8187.
And some folks have already done that. Good morning to you. You are on the air.
Hello?
Let's see if they hung around. Good morning to you. You're on the air.
Hello, caller. Are you there?
I'm here.
There.
I'm here.
Ah, there you
You're
are.
You're on the air.
It's you. Good
More
morning.
Well, it seems to me that any open discussion of the topic is preempted immediately when anyone who is opposed to unrestricted immigration is immediately labeled as anti-immigrant.
You think so?
Well,
has it happened to you?
Oh, yes. I mean, if you do not, if you choose to actually address the topic in any substantive way, rather than just platitudes, then immediately you and refuse to frame it in such simplistic ways, then immediately you are labeled as anti-immigrant, which, again, I say preempts any possibility of discussing the real aspects of what are the defining forces of what is what does happen.
You know, what I guess I'd like to clarify is that today what we've tried to do is, at least what I tried to do is say that what has been missing is a comprehensive discussion of how immigration has happened in this country.
May I add?
Well, can I just finish the sentence?
Go ahead.
I'd be glad to. So I think that I really do appreciate what you're saying, because what I'm hoping, you know, if anything positive can come out of these times, is that we realize that it's a critical issue for our country and internationally for us to think about.
Always has been.
It has been, and it's been a part of the work that I've done, you know, historically in our community. I think the thing has been that it takes a real desire to look at how economic, social, cultural forces all come together.
Environmental
forces, you know,
and diminishing resources, which you know, essential resources is really what binds us together.
Right, and I think that, you know, what happened in when NAFTA passed is that we said that global resources could cross borders freely, but we didn't really take into account what impacts that would have internationally. And I think that that wasn't the first moment, but that was a defining moment of really knowing that we were creating some policies that would impact human beings, but not taking into account that we had to think through not only the economic, but the social and the resources, as you just said. So I do totally agree with you that, you know, opening the discussion is not an easy one, because we come from it from many different places.
Well, if you just look at the mechanics of government and how is a votary represented, and how does the votary's concerns come to the fore in government discussion, and then how budgeting takes place. And now I'll just say one of the most immediate turnoff to anyone from people who seemingly advocate unrestricted immigration is that, well, they take jobs that Americans don't want, which immediately obscures the reality of what are the social, long-term social consequences of people being underemployed or unemployed or underpaid. And, if you try to raise those issues, that, okay, how is it that at the same time as a domestic issue among, let's say, the tenured population, how can we address those issues of fair payment for work done at the same time while arguing that, oh, well, but we have this immigrant population which is willing to take jobs that Americans aren't willing to take. Those kinds of contradictions are just immediately glossed over as though there are no consequences to leaving those things unanswered. And I'm saying that as long as, and again, how do you budget for something as forceful and dynamic as, let's say, unrestricted immigration? You can't. There's no way you can run government that way, whatever kind of government you want to label it. So, I mean, we got to get away from this simplistic and platitudinous way of talking about it.
Let's give Liz another chance to respond.
I agree totally, but let's hear what she's got to say.
I'm going to get off the air, and I'd like to hear others.
Before you get off the air, I think that a lot of what you've said is not in contradiction necessarily to anything. The complexity of immigration and migration, it's a global phenomenon. We're talking about it here in the United States, but really it's happening all across the world. And when immigrant people leave their land to travel thousands of miles, it's not an easy decision.
Right.
And it's
I understand that.
Right.
Everybody understands that. You know, it's point.
I don't know that everybody does understand.
No,
that.
I just
to also immediately though try to draw a similarity between, let's say, documented immigration and make no distinction between that and undocumented immigration is, again, to completely skirt real issues.
Yeah, I don't think that's what we're trying to do. At least what I'm trying to do right now is bring attention to the fact that right now one of the things that need to happen is that the discussion at the level that you're suggesting needs to happen. However, what's actually happening is that someone who is Sensenbrenner's bill, what he essentially presented would not address the concerns that you are bringing up.
Yep.
He would not do that. That bill will not bring us any closer to the level of discussion that you're considering.
Exactly.
Because it will really seek to just divide. I mean, it really seeks to divide us even more, and it seeks to divide people like you and me who could agree on many of the points that you just raised.
Mm-hmm.
However, you know, by making felons criminals, Halliburton actually got an extension of a contract to build more detention centers.
Yes,
you know,
they
that
did.
Is not the kind of society that I believe that you or I really want to support. Now, do we need to have the level of conversation that we could possibly have if we had, you know, days and weeks and months to, you know, think about the issue and think about it in a way that isn't being thought about by our government representatives, because they're trying to really just build a wedge between not only the people that contribute, many of the people that came here and that you're talking about, the people that have pending residency status would be swept up in this legislation. They don't make distinction between people who have a pending residency because, you know, their parents came here 20 years ago and, you know, established citizenship. It is a sweep across the board and would sweep up those people who have been here patiently waiting, you know, in a kind of limbo status. And so it's a very complex proposal that he brought forward, but in some ways it's very simple. It makes everyone a felon. It makes people like me, like Christina, who's my daughter, who works for positive change in our community, it would make us accomplices. Anybody who, if you have neighbors or people that you relate to in your life, it would make you an accomplice as well. And that's the level of repression that this bill introduces into and has passed in the House of Representatives. So I just wanted to put that out to you as a point to think about. It's not that we're saying that this is a simplistic discussion and that, you know, no one right here is necessarily saying that open borders is the way. But what I am saying is that we need a thorough discussion, that this bill does not get us closer to that.
Well, that's all right.
I agree.
I'll get off the line with
all
just
right.
saying that anyone who looks at any of the data and conclusions drawn by the major universities' departments of demographics know that it's not going to be a simpler issue. It's going to be a more complex issue as we progress, because the whole world is looking for a better neighborhood because the environments are collapsing.
Yeah, and goodness
and so,
knows,
yeah.
many
so we're, so
of
we're
us
looking,
are going to be looking for better neighborhoods too.
The politics, the chaos of politics is one of the consequences of what we're confronting, of huge migrations of populations. So I'm just saying it's not going to become a simpler issue. It's going to become more complex, and it's going to be more difficult to deal with emotionally, simply because there's no way that all of us aren't going to be directly and immediately affected in the way we live. And so we got to get to a point where we can talk about it in non-simplistic
all right.
terms.
Thanks very much for your call.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
And, of course, you know, something that one of the underlying issues that many people don't want to look at is that in large part, America has created this problem because of the fact that we have gone all around the world and behaved in the way that we've behaved, that we have allowed and encouraged and
behaved in the way we've
behaved. The entirety of Latin America to have such corrupt governments. We've encouraged and paid them off and supported them.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's elaborate. You know, behave the way we behave means destabilizing governments and economies abroad to serve American interests.
Exactly. And so, of course, people are left with no alternative but to try to come here because they can't stay at home and work because there is no work because we've impoverished those countries by vacuuming all of their wealth northward. And, you know, we've basically created this problem. It's coming home to roost in a big way.
Christina, really,
we don't want to deal with
it. I was going to respond to a couple of things that the man who was on the phone just mentioned. When he was talking about the conversation about immigration and unrestricted immigration, I just wanted to let people know that tomorrow at noon for the march at Pioneer Square, many of the groups that are there supporting the march, they're not talking about a conversation about unrestricted immigration. They're talking about having pathways towards residency and citizenship, having that option be open to discussion at least, because right now that's not where we're at. As well as, I also wanted to touch on the environmental concerns, which I think it goes back to the point in the Sensenbrenner bill, is that they're talking about expanding the border wall. They're talking about covering it all along the U.S.-Mexico mm-hmm. border. So when we talk about environmental concerns, let's think about that, what impact that will have, as well as all the centers that Halliburton are being contracted to build.
Mm-hmm. That's right, $385 million mm-hmm. to Halliburton. I'm sorry, not to Halliburton. What are we thinking? It's to KBR.
Oh, well, that's the same.
Which we all know is, I'm sure,
and of course,
much
not
more
even,
careful with their money.
Let's not even talk about all the people from Mexico and Central America who die trying to come here. Every single day people die in the desert or in vans or trucks or somewhere like that trying to cross the border. And it's just, this is just the most insane thing I think that our government has ever tried to do. I mean, you know, if 25 years ago, if someone said, oh yeah, when you get older, they're going to build a giant wall 10 feet tall between the U.S. and Mexico, you would have laughed hysterically and said, what are you smoking? Are you crazy?
Well, actually, I'm from the border. I'm from El Paso. And right at the point where Juarez and El Paso, as local communities, were really interdependent.
Yes.
I try to make the analogy of just imagine that you're going to try to go to Vancouver
right.
to, mm-hmm. you know, maybe you live in Vancouver. Well, you know what? Sorry, you can't go see your cousin because, you
right.
know, that is just off limits
and
to you.
And there's a huge long line, takes all day to get
yes,
through.
Yes, that's yeah. true. And so that's the level of interdependency between communities on the border. And I'll just put one more thing out, and it may help or may make things more complicated. We are indigenous people in this country.
That's
we
right.
are people who have lived in the Southwest for generations, for thousands of years, and we're indigenous to this continent. And that makes it even more complicated because in some ways, you know, we're talking about historical forces that are, you know, once again attempting to divide a people that lived here, you know, before
yes.
the immigrants that wrote the Constitution of the United States. So it makes it complicated emotionally for me, but what I'm suggesting is that we do have to do what the previous caller suggested, and that we all, as people who are thoughtful, progressive people, come together and realize that we're facing threats to, you know, I've been accused of being a tree hugger. We're facing threats to... We're facing threats to the environment. We're facing threats to just our basic human rights and to our ability to feed our families, not just immigrant people, but all of us together. And
heck
so this
yeah.
so this is our opportunity to do something we haven't done very well as a progressive community.
I agree.
And that is to really take the moment to start to understand at a deeper level. I know that that sometimes it's hard to listen to each other because we come from different perspectives, but I think that if people look at the Sensenbrenner provisions, a thoughtful, progressive person would come to the conclusion that making a felon out of a working person is not the solution, that
mm-hmm.
making a person who is taking a mom to a hospital or a teacher who's trying to teach her, you know, class, their ABCs, making her into a criminal is not the answer to our country's problems. And that right now what people, I'm urging people to do, really, any person who has done international solidarity with Latin America or has thought about the issues of the West Bank, You know, mm-hmm. those are the same issues that we're facing here. Those are the very same issues that we're facing mm-hmm. here, and the repression will only escalate. I can just assure you, if this legislation passes,
yes.
the repression will just escalate, mm-hmm. and you're right, they tipped their hat with this one.
Well, you know, it's true, and I think that they will take it as an okay. It's okay. Well, hey, they let us get away with that. Now we can get away with something worse.
Right, and I mean, I think we've seen this administration sort of test the waters in a number of ways over the last 5-6 years, and the waters look pretty damn scary right now, and they haven't had the outcries that I would have hoped and expected they would have when, say, you know, they incarcerate a U.S. citizen indefinitely without trial because they can label him an enemy combatant. That sort of thing, you know, might have raised more of an outcry than it did, but as it turns out, it didn't. So it's time, really beyond, way past time, to start really making noise, really talking about the draconian nature of these bills, of legislation like, say, you know, the Patriot Act that was just passed.
And what their motivations might be.
All of that. It is 22 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning, and we need to take another call, 503-231-8187. We are about to lose Liz, who has to sneak off and actually go to work. But we hope that you'll stay tuned and that we can continue this discussion. Christina, we get to keep you, right?
Yeah, for a little bit.
We're going to be captive, even though Liz is going to run away.
And then good morning to our next caller. You're on the air.
Howdy.
Hello.
Well, I just wanted to say I just am delighted with your discussion. It's so germane. It's so on the point. The fact that it's been raised with respect to an issue that is immigration is perfect, because the last caller talked about the point where we all start falling away from ourselves. We can't operate as a group because something comes into the discussion that lets us find a division between us. And you know, right now there's one thing I believe that breaks the ice on that, and that is that the issue, the debate has to be raised to the level of survival. I absolutely believe every element that you folks have been talking about fits into this pattern. And that is that we have to unashamedly and with courage face the fact that we are in a survival mode. The attack is not only on the planet, which we hear a lot about through the environmentalists, but it's absolutely on the peoples of the world. The debate has to be lifted to that. You can't apologize for demanding that it be talked about in those terms. There is no representation for those of us that want to survive. I've talked to my own senators here on the issue of this spy deal.
Mm-hmm.
And to our discredit on this West Coast, our two states split on the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a break.
Mm-hmm.
I've been down to Portland with my wife from Vader, Washington, 60 miles away from you. We know that it costs resources to do that. But we do it anyway. And we are astonished, as you are, to find that there's only 22 people that give a shit.
Oops. Sorry, you can't say that on the air.
Well, I'm sorry. There's a lot of things you can't do, and there's going to be less and less things that you can't do.
Let's go ahead and give Liz a chance to respond.
Well, yeah. I'm just going to hope to clarify. I think I understand what you're saying, and that is that we are basically in this together, and that we have to struggle together to find solutions that are human solutions, and that things like immigration are wedges that that certain groups use to divide us as progressive people and as people that are standing up for our economic and our, you know, survival as people, as human beings, as our basic rights. So I just want to make sure that that's kind of in line with what you're saying. Hello?
I think we've lost
him. Oh, sorry. Well, I mean, that's what I took him to say. I'm not sure if I was correct, but I think that that's, right now, I have worked probably most of my life. I mean, as long as I knew that I could do something in a positive way to impact our community, to help bring dignity to the issue of immigrant rights, that's what I've done. And I think for anyone who's worked for peace and social justice, this is the time to look at it at home. And this is what I would ask people to do. I would ask people to come tomorrow at noon to Pioneer Square and stand in solidarity with people who are contributing positively to our economy, and also to people who are probably the scapegoats.
Mm-hmm.
As I described in the incident below, I told this story about this young woman who was on her way to pay her taxes to a person who you might not think of as particularly, you know, radical in any way. And she said, you know, it sounds like Nazi Germany. Mm-hmm. Because for a couple minutes, if that young woman would have, you know, made it back home to her family, she would have also been swept up in that. And you know, those are the stories that, you know, you hear and you think, oh my gosh, you know, that happened somewhere else. But no, that it's happening here. And we know it is. And we have to, you know, if we stand for anything in terms of progressive politics, we have to stand for human rights. And that is what's at stake at this moment. So two additional things. The senators and representatives are hearing overwhelmingly from anti-immigrant folks.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to pick up a pen or, you know, type an email, but really, phone calls work great. Phone calls are great, but they also, you know, I don't know what it is. They like to write a lot. Evidently, you know, the mail pouring in is not from the people who stand with immigrants and who stand on the rights of, for human rights. So I really would encourage anybody who can send a message off or make a phone call to do so in the next few days. This debate will come to the Senate, and Spector has introduced legislation that Christina can, you know, continue talking to you about. As Ani said, I have to go off to work and contribute to our economy and our society. And, you know, I work with people every day. The students I work with are contributing. My colleagues that are immigrants are contributing. I just don't see how making people felons is going to make our community a better thing. And
of course
and,
not.
And, you know, I didn't mean to be dramatic a little while ago when I said if I disappear. But, you know, what we do have to think about
is
having...
I don't think it is dramatic.
Well, what we do have to think about is if this legislation passes, you know, then did we participate in helping it pass, or did we participate in
Silence is the voice of complicity.
That's right.
Time to get out there, your phones, and fire them up, everybody.
You know, and the struggle is long and hard, but you know what? We're strong people, and together we can fight this legislation. And with that, I'm going to say goodbye, and thank you so much.
Thank you so much for joining us, Liz.
And we'll see you tomorrow.
Adios, and thank you for being here. And it was very, very, very informative, and I'm sorry you can't stay, but I know you've got to go off and make money to feed your family. Thank you.
Bye-bye, Liz.
We still have Christina, who is a very able spokeswoman. I guess one of the things, before we go to our next caller, one of the things that just really appalls me is that, I mean, I guess people haven't really thought this through, like, you know, that famous phrase from the Latin, qui bono, who benefits? Who benefits if we criminalize and make felons out of a huge number of Americans? Why, that would be the people who build prisons. And that would be...
Oh, that's getting us back to Halliburton.
Yeah, exactly, to Halliburton and the prison guard industry and the whole private corrections industry and the people who, you know, of course, would have to prosecute and all the courts, blah, blah, blah. And who do you think would be paying for that, folks? I think that, you know, people are saying, oh, well, we can't afford to have these illegal immigrants in our society. Well, just think of how much it's going to cost us, just for those who are very financially oriented. Think of what it's going to cost us to do this, just financially, not even socially or emotionally or, you know, societally speaking.
Beyond the moral issue.
Exactly. It's appalling. I mean, and who's going to benefit? The rich people, not us. Things to ponder.
There's so many places to go at this point.
Yes.
One of them, I know that I believe Spector, the bill that Spector is trotting out, has guest worker provisions.
That's true, and that's the dangerous thing, because that is one thing that Bush has said that he will sign on to, and which Sensenbrenner does not include, but Specter has slipped that in there. And the thing about that is that although it has the guest worker provision in there, it does not have the pathway towards citizenship or residency, which is really what we're advocating for, that the discussion needs to include that.
Can we explain to our listeners who might not be so familiar with what guest worker programs are? If I'm not mistaken, guest worker programs have their bills, their pieces of legislation that invite folks to come to the U.S. to do extremely hard work without really any protections for them as workers, so that their labor can be extremely freely exploited by those that would hire them, and then they are put back in their countries of origin mm-hmm. because they have no path towards citizenship or residency after yes. their guest worker time is over.
Come and let us abuse you and then go home.
More or less.
That's more or less, and even though we can look at the positive side of it and say we're giving people the opportunity for work, if we look back historically at the guest worker programs of the Braceros,
mm-hmm.
they were exploited and they didn't get what they were promised. The workers were still waiting for the benefits that the government had promised to them. Even now, these 80, 90-year-old men who had come to work were still waiting
yep.
for compensation.
Well, and what they
the
got
government.
In large part was cancer from all of the pesticides and herbicides they used as braceros, as farm workers, and, you know, basically, you know, nothing to show for it, as you said. And I just think the whole thing is, I think it's fascinating that one way that you can become a citizen is if you are someone who is here and doesn't have documentation. Well, you can join the army, and then you get to be a citizen when you get out.
Right.
And that's just appalling. I mean, my Apollo meter has been broken for several
it's
years
true.
Now.
It's true. I watched it shatter last year.
I even
it
got it
sad.
Repaired a couple times, and it kept breaking.
She tried
so
to reinforce
I just,
it.
Well,
just
connected, you know, hopefully tomorrow the... You know, your energy can be boosted up with this march and seeing everyone come together. So just again, reminding people that it's yes. going to be tomorrow at noon at Pioneer Square, that we're all going to be coming together in solidarity yes. and fighting for human rights.
Let's talk to a caller, shall we?
Let's do that. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. I've been working since the 60s in the migrant community. I was employed by the local grade school for a couple of years to go into the camps to find brothers and sisters of children who were in the school who had medical problems.
Well, you'd be a felon then.
Yeah, I know that now. And then I worked for Migrant Head Start. But anyway, I called because I think two callers ago the fellow said these policies follow the problems of these waves of immigrants coming in. That's why we have to set up these new laws and these policies. That's not true. It's just the opposite. The waves of immigration, outsourcing and insourcing, follow terrible policies and politics set up by our government. NAFTA, the works. That's the reason
right.
everything is off.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that just amazes me, and that a lot of people aren't realizing in their hearts, when they say, well, we don't want, you know, people coming in and taking jobs that we barely have access to, and there aren't that many jobs, it boils down to discrimination of other people of different color, different language. It's discrimination,
it's
and that's
racism.
All it is, because it started mm-hmm. with the Reagan. Reagan started setting up policies where Mexicans could come in and work, but then they'd have to leave after a certain period of time.
Right.
And that's called discrimination. You're using people, and the reason you're using people that way is that you have policies set up to protect corporations and who are destroying environmentally things. The stories I heard, I'm not in the migrant milieu right now, but the stories I've heard are just mind-boggling. And they're all the bottom line on all the stories is discrimination and racism and hatred. And you can't get around it because, you know, if someone wants to come in and work, they... You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, definitely.
I'm really emotionally distraught by people not seeing this, because it's so clear to see that our outsourcing and this insourcing where you bring slaves in, the slave can come in for 5 months, but they have to leave their family at home, and then they go back. And, you know, it's all, it doesn't have any, the politics are affecting us. The legislators are really affecting our future. It's not the immigrants.
Thanks very much for your call this morning.
Thank you. Oh, go ahead.
No. After you, Kirsten.
Well, I just want to say, you know, it is a really, really emotional subject, and it really, it hurts, you know. It hurts when I see this attack happening because, you know, I was born here. I'm a citizen. I have papers. I can go to Portland State University, whereas other students, they're really struggling to even go to school, go to community college, pay for it themselves, not have access to financial aid. And, you know, these are my friends. These are people. This is my family. So it does get very emotional. It's really hard to have this discussion when you're that emotional about it, but it's one that's really important that we need to have. So thank you for calling.
Yeah, thank you. And let's go ahead and go to our next caller. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. And good morning. You're on the air.
Thank you so much for having me on, and I'm glad you're having this discussion. I find it interesting that the greatest proponents of open borders and cheap labor is President Bush, the Wall Street Journal, the National Association of Home Builders, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, Catholic Charities, all want to have high levels of immigration, legal and illegal, in order to depress wages for big business and to create consumers for the Walmarts and to build more homes. You know, the greatest threat to our environment, our natural environment, is overpopulation. And the U.S. Census Bureau in the last census stated that our population will likely double over the next 50 years, exceed a half a billion people. In fact, some demographers have said the United States will join with China and India as the only countries that have a billion people by the turn of this century. 90% of our population growth is due to immigration, and I think that has terrible, terrible implications for our natural environment, our wages, and the working conditions of average Americans. And the big business has used immigration for years to wipe out unions. In fact, they virtually wiped the unions out of the Midwest meatpacking business. They've ruined the unions in Southern California. There used to be a black janitors union in Southern California that at the time before they disbanded because of competition from illegal aliens, they were earning over $13 an hour. Those jobs now pay about $7 an hour if they're even paid on the books and not paid under the table. When you talk about having open borders like you do, all you're doing is ruining the chance for low-income Americans and minority workers already here in the United States by having job people compete for those jobs and lower them.
I think actually what I argue for is actual radical analysis. Why are so many people immigrating?
Because they live in terrible places. I've been to Mexico. I wouldn't want to live there.
Why is Mexico's economy in the state that it's in?
Well, you know, Mexico has the 10th largest economy in the world. They are very, very rich in natural resources. They got one of the greatest sources of oil. But because they're a socialist country that's basically a bankrupt oligarchy, only the rich in Mexico benefit. And they want to outsource their, you know, their poor and poorly educated people. You know that Mexico reaps $20 billion a year in remittance from the United States? It's the largest source of income they have. That's why Vicente Fox and their leaders want to have open borders and send people up here. And unfortunately, in this country, we've got people who are playing right along with that game. And by doing so, are undermining our natural environment and ruining the work structure for many low-income Americans. And they do it under the guise of being compassionate and progressive. It's the last of that. They're taking advantage of these poor people coming up here to steal jobs from minority workers in the United States. I mean, the highest level of unemployment in the United States right now is black males. and they're competing directly for jobs from people coming from Latin America who would be willing to pay under the table.
Okay, well, I think I probably disagree with a lot of the facts that you put out there. First of all, I want to know where you get your information about the largest population growth in the U.S. being through immigration.
This U.S. Census Bureau. Look it up. Go up to the U.S. Census Bureau. They'll have that data for you.
I'm familiar with the U.S. Census Bureau, but I don't believe that I've interpreted that information in the way that you have.
Okay, what do you say it is?
So,
What do you say the growth of population of immigration is?
The growth of population of immigration?
Yeah, the percentage of population of our growth that is due to immigration, if you don't believe it's 90%.
I don't believe it's 90%. I'm not going to come up with a figure out of my hat.
Okay, well, I know that it is. I mean,
okay.
If the Census Bureau is correct. Let me tell you something else.
Hold on a second. You've talked for a bit.
Let me finish my statement. The Milken Institute just did a study in Los Angeles County. It was a partnership between the city of Los Angeles, the county of Los Angeles. What they discovered was that 15% of the workforce in L.A. County, 680,000 workers, are paid under the table. 61% of those 680,000 workers are illegal aliens. And what they've caused is a huge downward spiral of working conditions in L.A. County. And what you do is have one company who has to compete against somebody else. If the other company pays people under the table, illegal aliens under the table, they can't compete to get jobs. So then they've got to lower
their
wages. I
got two things. First of all, I personally just have to take issue with saying illegal aliens.
What's wrong with that?
Because we're talking about people.
They sound like they're from some other
galaxy. People from Venus. We're not talking about people.
The federal government. Alien is not a priority.
I'm just saying, I personally, as a Euro-white girl whose mama came from England, I would have an issue with some, you know, my grandmother always showed me her resident alien card.
Yeah.
And when I was a little kid, I thought that was a weird damn thing to call my grandma.
Really?
You know? I did not get into my grandma being called an alien.
So
I thought that was strange.
Would you call a bank robber an unauthorized withdrawal specialist?
I'm just saying, people are people.
Yeah.
And nomenclature is powerful.
And there are people in the country, and there's people
so
legally in the
that's
country.
One thing I wanted to say. I also want to give Christina a chance to respond.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I would just like to respond. We're not calling for open borders. We're not calling for just this mass flow of anyone who feels like rushing the U.S. That's not what's going to happen. That's not what's been happening. We're talking about a discussion, a real dialogue between people. And thank you for calling, because you are bringing up points that people, you know, are concerned about. And not that I agree with everything that you said, but I do understand your point of view. And I invite you to come tomorrow and listen to people who will be speaking at the march, union leaders, peace organizations, students from community colleges, from universities. Senator Avell Gordley, I believe, will be speaking at the march as well. So you're going to get a wide variety of perspectives about the issues you raised and maybe hear the truths of what is happening in our community. And it's not my community, the immigrant community, the Latino community. No, it's our community, and that's
right.
Why we're going out there.
Yeah, I think it's really important, since that caller mentioned unions and how immigration is busting unions. I think it is really, really important to underscore that SEIU, Local 503, that's Service Employees International, are one of the supporting organizations for tomorrow's event. Again, beginning at noon, Pioneer Square at the corner of Southwest 6th and Yamhill, noon tomorrow. Again, co-sponsored in part by SEIU, Local 503, also the International Workers of the World, and others.
Yes,
so
a number
important.
Of groups from across the board. Well, I ran out to try to find a toll-free number for Congress, but, you know, they come and go because they're not paid for by the government. Different organizations sponsor them, and so apparently there isn't one active at the moment, but here is the non toll-free number for the Capitol Hill switchboard. And, you know, if I would encourage you to call early in the morning, it's very inexpensive, and they're there because they're 3 hours ahead of us. So if you call, say, at 7:30 in the morning our time, then it would be basically practically a free call for you. Area code 202-225-3121. That's the Capitol Hill switchboard. You can get any representative senator. You can just say, hi, I'd like to speak to Senator Snort or Representative Dingell or, you know, whatever. 202-225-3121. And that's the Capitol Hill switchboard. And before we go to our next caller, let me tell you why you should stick around at 9 o'clock, not go anywhere. And that's because we have some fabulous things coming up at 9. It's the APA Compass, that's Asian Pacific American Compass, with a focus on the potential impact of this bill on immigrants. Also hear from participants in Disorient, the first Asian American Festival of Oregon. At 10, one of the organizers of this year's International Women's Day celebration will tell us what's lined up for Sunday at Portland State University. At 10:30 on Sounds of Awareness, the topic is the psychological challenges of being the parent of a child with disabilities. And at 11 on Democracy Now!, author and activist Arundhati Roy talks about Bush's visit to India and activists review the response to the Katrina disaster 6 months later. So then, of course, you know, after that, we'll be having fabulous music all day. So just stay tuned to KBOO. And for those of you who missed that not toll-free number, the number to the Capitol Hill switchboard, so you can call your senators and tell them what you think of this bill, and not just our senators, but everybody, 202-225-3121. There you have it.
And I have to say, and not for the first time, I love our AM News and Public Affairs Director, Kathleen Stevenson, tirelessly working.
She's awesome.
So Kathleen heard me not pull a number out of my hat, and so she came in with the number. This is, let's see here, it's from a website on migration, Population Reference Bureau, www.prb.org. It is. The volume of legal migration has fluctuated since 1930s. Immigration has accounted for an increasing portion of population growth as American women began to have fewer children. Today, one-third of the U.S. population growth is from net migration. The U.S. Census Bureau projects that U.S. population will reach 403,687,000 by 2050. Of this growth, 36% may be from immigration. So 36%, which is a figure far closer to what was rambling around.
Yes, and of course, you know, for those of you who think that that Oregon is a lily, or rather that America is a lily white country, blah blah blah. In California, Latinos are already the greater numbers than any other ethnic group in that state. And I think that that is a trend that will continue. And, you know, we need to face the reality that the face of our country is changing, and that these folks who are moving to our country are bringing a lot of wonderful things to our culture, that they're not just people who are coming to take our jobs away
and
embrace them, you know?
And I would say that it is changing, but that at the same time, maybe it's just more visible because, as mm-hmm. we had talked about earlier, we have been here.
Mm-hmm.
This
mm-hmm.
is our country.
Of course.
So
it's really important, especially when you're talking about California,
yes.
New Mexico, Arizona, mm-hmm. you know, Texas, mm-hmm. that in fact, you know, indigenous people didn't recognize
yes.
a border, a national border, especially before a couple hundred years ago when it started to exist.
And, of course, some of the native tribes actually have things in their treaty that say they can go back and forth between here and Canada.
That's
so,
sort of what I'm...
Yeah, people from Mexico should be able to freely move
sort of
back
what
and
I'm
forth,
saying.
Too. Yeah. But they don't have that same guarantee, which, of course, is not right.
So here we are, 11 minutes to go. Make it 10. And I know that we have some more callers,
yes,
so
do.
Good morning. You're on the air.
Hello?
This is Payphone Patty. How are you guys?
Oh,
hey,
hi.
Hey.
Okay, here's the deal. I'm retired now, but as you probably know, I'm a retired cook
yes.
chef, and I've been doing kitchen work. All of my coworkers were from the Latino community, almost all of them. Okay, and I just want the, and I'm going to put quote marks here, I just want the gringos, quote unquote, who are listening today to realize that, number one, when you take away an ability of somebody to feed themselves, when the United States' imperialist policy takes land away from people who can no longer grow their own food, and the priorities of Chiquita tomato and Monsanto chemical is more important than people feeding themselves, what are people supposed to do?
Good question.
Are they supposed to starve to death?
That's a really good question.
All right. Number two, these folks, my Latino brothers and sisters, are very, very hardworking, very, very industrious people. They all get paid minimum wage. I have no idea how they make ends meet. But I want you people to know that almost every single person I've ever spoken to always sends money home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, and if it wouldn't be for the dollars that these people send home, the economy of Mexico would have collapsed a long time ago.
It's so true.
It's obviously true. So please look at our Latino brothers and sisters with compassion. And with
Thank you.
And with humanity. Have a very, very nice day.
Thanks.
And show up.
Yes.
Be there or be square.
That's right.
Bye-bye.
Well, you know, it's interesting because there's a man who's a famous chef who's on TV. His name is Anthony Bourdain, and he wrote this very fascinating book called Kitchen Confidential about what it's really like to be a chef. And he said, when people ask him all the time who are aspiring chefs, you know, what's the secret to your success? And he says, the first thing I tell them is learn to speak Spanish. He said, because all the people you work with in the restaurant industry, practically all of them are going to be Latino. He said he's worked with a number of chefs who didn't speak Spanish and had no idea what were going on in their own kitchens. And he said, not only that, but he said, some of the people he's worked with, because traditionally in the chef business, you know, you do start as a dishwasher and move up. He said, some of the greatest chefs he's ever worked with have been, you know, people who are here illegally, who started out in restaurants as dishwashers and were just fabulous chefs. And he said that he thinks that many people just don't have any idea how rich Latino culture is and how much these people have to offer because they can't talk to them. And, you know, so many people, even today in America, can't speak a word of Spanish, and it's a crime. It's just ridiculous. We all need to learn to speak more languages to communicate with each other.
You know, also on this page that Kathleen ran into me, there are some great bar graphs about immigration trends over the last century here. And I just have to note, because I think it's pretty fascinating, in the 90s, 91 through 98, immigrants in thousands, that would be then, 7,605,068.
That's 7 billion.
I was going to say, but now we do in thousands, so that doesn't really...
I don't think that's right.
That can be. I think that's the actual number, not in thousands. So 7 million, say just over 7.5 million, and... I just want to point out that, in fact, 1901 through 1910 has nearly 9 million.
And almost all of them were from Europe.
And almost all of them were from Europe, as opposed to now it looks like maybe just under two-thirds would be from Latin America, and about maybe just under a third. Asia and, you know, like a
and
quarter.
Not only that, but looks, from this graph, it shows from 1981 to about 2000 that in those two decades that immigration from Central and America and Mexico was pretty consistent. Between those two decades. So people who think, oh, my God, people are coming in record numbers.
I just really wanted to point out that whole the beginning of the last century, 1901 through 1910, looks like it had the highest period of immigration in the 20th century. So good to keep that in mind.
I just wanted to also remind people that, it is thank you to the caller for talking about his experience with the Latino community, but also let's look at the communities that are also going to be affected, the Asian community, the African community, all these different communities, and also people who have been living here for generations as well will be affected by the Sensenbrenner bill as well as the Specter bill that's been introduced into the Senate. And so we really need a focus on legislation that takes into account human rights and, realistic, good, strong economic policies towards other countries that are fair and just. So so.
And not to mention people who, you know, there's a lot of people here from Canada who come down to work, and,
that's,
you know,
right,
there's a lot of people from America that go up to Canada, and, you know, it's sort of casual and, you know, wink, wink, nod, nod. It's going to make that very difficult. And, you know, I just don't think this, who is this, like I said, you have to look at who is this going to benefit. It's not going to benefit any of the people that, you know, we've been talking about this morning.
Let's squeeze in. Let's squeeze in one last caller. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning.
Hi.
Good morning.
Hi. I'm looking forward to being at the march tomorrow. I've been a peace activist for many years, and I've heard on KBOO a speaker who wrote The Left Hand of God, which I highly recommend for bringing people together in all movements, class, gender, race. And also last night I went to see the Black Panthers at PSU, the Black Panther presentation, three Black Panthers from L.A. And, you know, we have a lot to see there, because they had some very simple, very clear messages about uniting all people through race and gender, everything, no class differentiations. And they were highly sought after to be destroyed by the government.
Oh, yeah.
Because their methods were working. And
right.
So that's, I think, when we come together as a people, we can beat these simplistic thoughts that the government is implicating to divide and conquer us. And it just comes right down to that, and it is a really, it's the way they get it is, you know, oftentimes I'll listen to, you know, because I am a white person, you're a white girl like you are, I oftentimes will be in conversation with other white people who think they can say certain racist comments,
right,
and I don't let it fly, you know, and I bring up all sorts of interesting things, but they're able to see that. They're able to see it in a good way when we come at it from a gracious, loving, and compassionate way, because so many people have been indoctrinated. So I'm really looking forward to this.
Excellent. And you suggested the book, The Left Hand of God. I believe that's by Michael Lerner.
Yeah.
He's a rabbi. He's actually going to be the guest on talk radio this next Monday.
Great.
How about that? So here on KBOO, you can hear Michael Lerner, 7:30
to 9. Excellent. I have some toll-free numbers, actually local numbers.
Uh-huh.
The Peace Worker this month, January and February edition, has a whole list of cutout, keep this handy list.
Uh-huh.
And if you want the local number for Wyden and Smith, I have it right here.
Sure.
Okay, 503 for Wyden, 326-7525, and the local number for Gordon Smith, 326-3386. And then there's a lot of list of all the district, the representatives,
okay,
also, so people want to pick up that. Yeah.
It's the new, yes, issue of the Peace Worker. Thank you very much for your call.
Yes,
thank
indeed.
You.
Thanks a lot. And, of course, you know, you can send email, you know, if you have access to an email account for free.
But letters tend to work the best.
Mm-hmm. Are what
letters
we're really encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
Letters as much as possible.
Well, now, I thought that in the days of anthrax, that letters were now looked
it's
at
six
with
years
suspicion.
Later, we don't think about that anymore.
And, you know, one thing, thank you to the caller. Also, just remind people that what I really believe is important is educating ourselves about not only the bills, but what is the reality that we're facing here. So let's go out there and educate ourselves. And an easy step to take is just showing up tomorrow and, like I said before, hearing the real story. And that's going to be tomorrow at noon, Saturday, March 4th, 12 o'clock at Pioneer Square. And that's where it starts, educating ourselves.
Marching forth on March 4th together, noon tomorrow. Thanks, Christina, so much for being here.
And yes, just indeed. I want to give out a number for more information. You can call the American Friends Service Committee, and that number is 503-230-9427. And thank you both.
Thank you very
much. Thank you. And
see
thanks for
week.
All of your work.
It's 9 o'clock, and you are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next,